Okay. So first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk here, and all of you for coming to listen. So my name is Elsa Prada, and I belong to the ICMM in the FESIC in Madrid, in Spain. And I'm going to talk about quantum pumping in graphene. You can find these unrelated previous works in these references here. And first of all, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators, who are Pablo San Jose, also from Madrid, who is here in the audience, Sigmund Koller of my same institute, and Henny Somerus in Lancaster University in the UK. So this is the outline of my talk. First, I will highlight some of the aspects that make graphene so interesting and so special as compared to a two-dimensional electron gas, like our chirality, or the role of evanescent modes, or bipolarity. And I will talk how they affect transport. In particular, we are talking about quantum pumping, transport driven by quantum pumping. I will go to the adiabatic regime, but very briefly, to focus mostly in the case of non-adiabatic pumping. And finally, I will conclude. So, chirality is one of these very important aspects of graphene. What is chirality? Chirality is what distinguishes this screw from this nail. So in the first case, this screw, in order to advance in a certain material, it has to spin in a certain direction that is related to the direction of motion. However, this nail doesn't. So in the same way we have this behavior here, we can also have this behavior for electrons. So in the case of electrons in a two-dimensional electron gas that are described by this Hamiltonian, these electrons are not chiral. The spin is independent of the momentum. However, in the case of graphene that is described with this Hamiltonian here, and we see that we have this multiplication of the momentum and the spin, and in particular in graphene, this is the pseudo spin defined by the sublattice degree of freedom. In this case, the eigenstates of graphene are chiral. Moreover, we can see that these bands are very different, and in particular, these bands are bipolar, so we can have transport coming from quasi-particles in the valence and in the conduction band and quasi-holes in the valence band. That does not happen here. Okay, so what is the role of chirality in transport? Sorry. Well, chirality tends to delocalize electrons. This is something that can be seen, at least in theory, in the weak anti-localization, where we have the destructive interference of counter-propagating backscatter paths, or we can also see this in the famous Klein paradox, or the unimpeded penetration of quasi-particles through high and wide barriers. So this is the angular distribution of the transmission through this barrier for these quasi-particles, and we can see that at normal incidence the transmission is one, and also that there is a wide region of momenta, of parallel momenta with respect to this interface, for which the transmission is pretty big. So actually, if we have such a system, as you see here, a certain flake of graphene of with L that is in contact to two metals, to two regions where we have a big charge density, a big Fermi surface, and we are interested in energies close to this point here, what the transmission we get for such a potential barrier is the one you see here for different energies. So the red curve corresponds to the Dirac point, and other Fermi energies corresponds to this other curves here. So we in general see that there is a wide window of momenta, parallel momenta with respect to the interface for which the transmission is very big. This is in contrast to the case of a two-dimensional electron gas of the same length, where in contact to two highly doped metals, where we can see that transport is coming from resonant levels that develop in this region. So only very sharp values of parallel momenta are contributed to transport. So in this case, we talk of a closed system, and this is due to the high velocity mismatch between these two regions as compared to graphene that behaves as an open system. These transmissions in a density plot are also plot here, where you see that red corresponds to transmission one. So again, we see that graphene conducts very well. So it's very open as compared to the behavior of a two-dimensional electron gas. Okay, so what is the motivation of our work? Well, we are interested in exotic properties of graphene close to the Dirac point, and in particular, how they affect transport. So in general, we're interested in driving a DC current through a system. In general, how do we drive such a current? Normally, what we do is that we take our graphene flake, we contact it to two electrodes, and we apply a voltage bias between these two electrodes. And in this way, we drive a current. But there is another way. And here's where the concept of pumping comes. And in particular, if we are dealing with a small system, we talk about quantum pumping. An electron pump is a device that it's able to generate a DC current through two electrodes that are kept at the same bias. The mechanism in which we can create this DC transport is by externally varying over time periodically the scattering properties of our central region. So by means of some external parameters that could be some, for example, some external magnetic fields, they could be some gates, they could be some external strains, they could be the transparencies of our central region with respect to the contacts. By varying them periodically over time, we can generate a transport through the system. Sorry. Okay. So in particular, we want to ask how does chirality impact the response of electrons at their local driving. And in particular, we are going to focus on a system like the one you see here. This is the potential profile that electrons are experiencing in a central region that we call the pump that has a certain length and a width that is much wider than the length, so that we don't pay attention to the edges. We don't care about them. And it's in contact to these regions where here in the case of graphene, we have highly doped graphene leads, or this could also be a two-dimensional electron gas system. So this is the potential profile that you see is varying over time periodically with a certain frequency and with a certain amplitude. The behavior of this system in the case of the most simplified case we can think of, so we have ballistic graphene, we neglect electron-electron interactions and other things. We want to see the basic and quantum coherent behavior of this system. The behavior of this pump is going to be related, or it's going to be influenced by the relation between these energy scales and the typical energy scale of our system, that in the case of a certain length L is given in the case of two-dimensional electron gas in terms of the effective mass, and in the case of graphene in terms of the Fermi velocity. So depending on how this frequency and amplitude compares to this energy, we are going to be in the adiabatic regime or in the non-adiabatic regime. In the adiabatic regime, this frequency is much smaller than the typical energy scale. So in this case, these external parameters that are modifying the scattering properties of our central region are varying so slowly over time that electrons almost don't feel that they are moving. However, in this other case, it's a dynamical problem, and electrons do feel because the frequencies of the order are bigger than this energy scale. Inside these two regions, we can also be in the case of weak driving or strong driving, depending on the magnitude of the amplitude with which we are varying these external parameters. Normally, the case of weak driving is more interesting. I guess that experimentally is more accessible, and also usually if we have any chance to get analytical results for our calculations, it's going to be in this regime. So well, we studied the case of adiabatic pumping in graphene back in 2009 in this paper. I'm going only to show you the results very briefly because I want to focus now in the other regime, the non-adiabatic regime. So basically what we studied here was, imagine we have a graphene flake that is in contact to two electrodes that are kept at the same bias. And now we place two gates underneath nearby, and we apply a voltage to this gate that is varying over time, periodically, and out of phase. In this way, we saw that we were able to drive a current. So these gates were creating an on-site potential profile of the shape of a two-barrier system. And it turns out that the adiabatic limit can be described in terms of a geometric formulation. I recommend to you this paper by Pete Brouwer, where it gives a very intuitive and easy, in my opinion, description of adiabatic pumping, assuming certain conditions, no interaction, zero temperature, adiabatic regime, and so on. He saw that the pump charge was the integral in parameter space of a certain very curvature that, sorry. That is given by these derivatives of the scattering matrix with respect to the external parameters. And he showed that in order to have adiabatic pumping, it's necessary to have at least two parameters varying over time, because we need to cover certain area in parameter space. One parameter alone is not enough. Okay, so this is the system we studied. We have this piecewise constant time-varying potentials in space, and we apply this formula here. And what we saw, and I don't want to go into details here because I already presented to some of you this work here, but basically we saw that the behavior of graphene is very different from the one of a two-dimensional electron gas, that a two-dimensional electron gas behaves like a closed system again as compared to graphene, and also that we were able to get pumping coming exclusively through evanescent modes, something that is not possible. So this corresponds, this is Parallel moment and this is Fermi energy. This here corresponds to the Dirac point. We were able to get transport coming exclusively through evanescent modes. And this was due to chirality, again. So we calculated the total pumping response, and it turned out that we compared both cases, and it turned out that at the Dirac point, we have a universal response for pumping, a universal pumping response at the Dirac point that was coming exclusively through evanescent modes, and it's very much related to the minimal conductivity in voltage-driven graphene. So just to summarize these results for the case of adiabatic pumping, we saw that chirality was playing a very important role, and it was enabled pumping through evanescent modes, something that was forbidden in two-dimensional electron gas, and we got this universal value in the weak driving regime for wider than long pumps. Okay, so now we go to the non-adiabatic regime, so now our frequencies are of the order or bigger than the typical energy scale. Okay, so now we ask ourselves, what are the minimal requirements to have pumping? And it turns out that in the non-adiabatic regime, one parameter alone is enough to get driving if there is some left-right asymmetries to the system. So we could think, for example, of having such a potential profile varying over time, and in this case we would be driving a non-adiabatic current. To make our lives easier, we consider this piecewise constant potential, so we have at the left part that is varying over time with a certain frequency, with a certain amplitude, and we leave the right part undriven, okay? So it turns out that non-adiabatic pumping is an out-of-equilibrium problem where an AC force without net bias is transformed into directed motion by means of breaking spatiotemporal symmetry. This formulation cannot be described in terms of geometrical phases, and another theory is required. And this is Floquet theory, that maybe you've heard about it. I don't have time now to go into the details of Floquet theory, but let me just give you some general comments. I think that Ferti will talk about it later in the next talk. So Floquet theory is a theory that turns a periodic time-dependent problem into a static one. So if this is the Schrödinger equation of our system with our Hamiltonian that is time-periodic with a certain period t, we can get the eigenfunctions in terms of this quasi-energy that corresponds, this phase of this quasi-energy that corresponds to the energy of the incoming quasi-particle, and a part of the wave function that depends on time periodically with the same period. This periodic part of the wave function can be expressed as a Fourier series with this frequency here given by the inverse of the period, and some coefficients that are independent of time and are labeled by this n. So that we are this is our Hamiltonian, a certain constant part and a certain part that varies over time in this way, we have to solve a set of n linear equations on the coefficients of the Fourier series. Okay, So actually what Floquet theory is doing is transforming a time-dependent Hamiltonian into a static one of coupled sidebands. These N are called sidebands. So that an electron that is scattering this time in this periodic time-dependent potential, what is feeling actually is the combination of the potential profile that comes from the sideband N equals zero, the undriven sideband, and a series of replicas of shiftive potentials by an integer number of energy h bar omega that corresponds to the energy of the electron under having absorbed or emitted n quanta from the driving field, so a number n of photons. And this is happening only in the region where we have driving and not in this region here. Okay, so then one can calculate the total current through the system as the difference of these sideband resolved transmissions, the transmissions from the left to the right after having absorbed n photons or emitted in the case of graphene, minus the transmission from the other side and integrated over energy and sum over all these sidebands. And then if we derivate this with respect to the Fermi energy, we can get our transport is coming just for this difference of transmissions at the Fermi energy at zero temperature. You can find this theory very well explained in this review by Sigmund Kohler, Lehmann and Hange, and also in this paper by Fernando Sols. Okay, so we want now to apply this theory to our problem. And we want to be in the strong non-adiabatic regime, because in this case, only one sideband is excited. So we have the n equals zero sideband, and in the case of graphene, n equal one and n equal minus one are going to play a role. However, in the case of the two-dimensional neutron gas, they only can absorb electrons, so n equal zero and n equal one. We want to be in the weak driving regime. And we are going to study wider than long pumps. Okay, so these are our results. So this is this difference of transmission from going from the left to the right minus going from the right to the left as a function of parallel momenta. So this is a density plot and as a function of quasi-energy. Red corresponds to transport going towards the right, and blue corresponds to transport going to pump charge going towards the left. So first thing we can see is, let me say that then if I want to calculate the total pump current, I have to integrate over momenta and also integrate over this quasi-energy from minus infinity to the energy, to the Fermi energy of our problem. So what we see, the first thing we see is that graphene, again, behaves in a very different way than a two-dimensional electron gas. We have, again, these cones here that remind us of what we got for voltage-driven transmission, these cones here as compared to these lines here. So actually what we have here is this cone and a couple of shifted cones, as you can see here, by this energy h bar omega. So the sideband n equals zero and sidebands n equal one and minus one are playing a role. Another thing we see is that most of our current, there are whole regions where our current has the same sign. So it's directed, it's not oscillating with momenta so that when we integrate, we lose this signal. So all these regions here corresponds to current going from one side to the other, so it's directed. We are really driving this current. And it turns out that the main contribution that is coming to this current is in this region here, so outside this dashed line. Outside this dashed line corresponds to the region of evanescent modes in the absence of driving. So we are having the biggest signal to our pump current is coming from the region of evanescent modes in the absence of driving. And it also happens the same in the case of a two-dimensional neutron gas. So the maximum pump charge signal is coming from this region outside this dashed line here. But there is a very different behavior between both of them. Here, a whole range of momenta and energies are contributing to the current, but I don't know if you can appreciate it well there. Here, these are very sharp resonances, and only then very sharp resonances are contributing to this transport, the same that happened with voltage-driven current. So now, let me show you a cut here, so at Fermi energy, at Dirac energy here, or at the band bottom in the case of a two-dimensional electron gas, and this is what we have. So this delta T over parallel momenta for graphene and for a two-dimensional electron gas. As you can see here, well, a whole range, a whole window of momenta are contributing in the case of graphene as compared to these resonant levels contributing in the case of a two-dimensional electron gas. We also see the bipolarity in graphene with respect to the two-dimensional electron gas. And we see that all this current is rectified. All this current is going from one side to the other. So now, what is the mechanism that is behind this pump charge? Well, the mechanism is we have certain incoming electron here that when arrives to the pump region, to the left part of the pump region, turns into an evanescent mode. However, in this region, we have driving, and it's able to absorb or emit one photon and turn into a propagating mode. When it turns into a propagating mode, it can go to the other side and easily exit the pump region. In the case of graphene, this can be done either by absorbing or emitting a photon, and in the case of a two-dimensional electron gas, it can also be done by absorbing a photon. However, a mode that is coming from the other side first encounters this region that is not driven, and then it transforms into an evanescent mode and finally dies before getting to the other side. And this is creating the asymmetry that is giving us this big signal. So this is the total pump charge, the total pump current, sorry, that we get as a function of Fermi energy for the case of graphene and for the case of the two-dimensional electron gas. First thing we see is that the pump charge in graphene is much bigger than in the case of a two-dimensional electron gas. And this is coming precisely for this mechanism of evanescent modes that are a whole, where a whole window of momenta and energies are contributing as compared to the case of the two-dimensional electron gas. And also we, by plotting this derivative of the current with respect to Fermi energy, we can see that the main contribution is coming actually from a region of energy H bar omega with respect to the Dirac point, which is this region of evanescent modes in the absence of driving. Well, we can calculate, actually we are able to get analytical results for this pump charge in both cases, in the case of the two-dimensional and the graphene case. I'm not showing the results here, but let me tell you that this maximum value here, this ratio of maximum values can be worked out analytically too, and depends only in these quantities, is independent of any other parameters, and it turns out to be of the order of 20 when you consider in the case of the two-dimensional electron gas, gold electrodes and gallium arsenide values for the effective mass. So now let me give you some numbers that we need to be in this regime. I've selected a couple of examples here. So imagine this L was of the order of 1 micron. We need to have a clean system for this theory to apply, although your system could not be clean, and in any case you would get pumping, but for this particular formulas to apply, we need a clean system. So imagine this is of the order of 1 micron. Then these are the typical energy scales of graphene in the two-dimensional electron gas. So we, in order to go to the really non-adiabatic regime, we need frequencies that are very difficult to get, I assume, in using gates, but that maybe could be gotten with lasers. And we get really sizable currents of the order of nanoamperes. If we go now to a little bit bigger distance here, this frequency can be decreased, and actually it turns out that the behavior for this delta T I was showing you before in the case of graphene depends exclusively on the multiplication of L times omega. So if we increase L, we can reduce omega and still have exactly the same physics. Okay, so this brings me to the conclusions. So we have shown that chirality keeps the contacts always open in graphene, and this is true for evanescent and also for propagating modes. However, resonant conditions are necessary and required for two-dimensional electron gases. For non-adiabatic pumping, the driving mechanism is such that any evanescent mode that can be excited into propagating is able to cross our pump. And there is a whole range of evanescent modes, a whole window of moment and energy that are available in graphene. And this is why it gives us such good efficiency as compared to the case of the two-dimensional electron gas where only isolated resonance contribute. And finally, all these modes are rectified so that are driven in the same direction. Thank you very much.
How sensitive do you expect this to be to heating effects, in particular? Heating effects. Mm-hmm. In any realistic situation, there's going to be some thermalization.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to be at zero temperature anymore. And so how much of this current is going to
be decreased? You are right. So if there are these heating effects, so if the time our electron spends in the pump region is bigger than the time it takes it to relax, then basically what I think is going to happen is that we are going to lose basically this region here. So probably this mechanism is going to be decreased, although I don't think it's going to disappear at all. So this would be like a smooth, this region here.
Hi. So you've shown your results for this very simple rectangular type of modulation. So how would that change if you go to, let's say, an experimentally realistic sinusoidal modulation? Would you still expect rectification there?
Yes. We just saw this piecewise constant case because it's easier to deal with analytically. But the effect is exactly there. So the variation is minimal. So the orders of magnitude and everything is just... it's just there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you spoke about the role of chirality, like as distinctive from the normal 2-deg. So, if you consider bilayers or ABC trilayers where you have still this chiral property, would you expect similar behavior or not because of the different band shapes?
I expect the similar behavior in the case of, there will be some variations, of course, but the fact that contacts are open and this chirality is playing a role, and there are these evanescent modes and so on, I expect bipolarity and so on, I expect this to be there, with all these small differences. Of course, when you have a bilayer, you can think of more sophisticated things. Like if you apply a voltage bias between the layers and you open a gap, then you can do something that is more similar to experiments of pumping with quantum dots, where maybe you can really close transport, well, open your transport, you let particles go in your central region, then you close, you open the other side, and then they go out. And I don't know, maybe in this case we could think even in trying to get some quantized pump charge, which would be something nice to have quantization. For what I show you here, this is not quantized, these are open systems. Yeah.
So the last talk of the